Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It was a joyful place to work, I have to say that. It
That's
was
amazing.
Joyful.
That's not always the case.
No, it was joyful. It is a family. When I say that, if you have done Mamma Mia on Broadway on the tours, like no other show I've ever done, it's a family. I'm not quite sure why that is. I think it's the nature of the show and the joy that it brings people, but it really and truly is a family.
Welcome, everybody, to a musical theater podcast where we discuss the cultural and emotional impact of some of our favorite musicals in theater history. My name is Jeffrey Scott Parsons. You can call me Jeff. Today, we are talking Mamma Mia, which was a theater request. Yes, that's right. We are sponsored. This episode is sponsored by Five Star Theatricals in Thousand Oaks, California. They are returning to live performance with an exciting production of Mamma Mia that will run 2 weeks beginning October 15th. It stars Broadway veteran Kim Huber as Donna, who we'll hear from later on in the episode. Judy, do you know Kim? I feel like she said you guys worked together.
We worked, yeah. I think, I'm not sure what we did together, but we know each other.
Anyway, she's awesome. She said to tell you hi.
Tell her hi back for me. I'm glad she's doing it.
Before we hear from Kim, I get to introduce our amazing guest whose voice you just heard. I don't always use detailed notes to introduce our guest, P.S. Judy, but okay. I needed them for you.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
You guys, she is basically the Yul Brynner of Mamma Mia. But like only if Yul Brynner had played the king and I.
There you go.
Right? Okay, she starred as Donna for 3.5 years and as Tanya for 7.5 years, which means she performed Mamma Mia over 4,000 times on Broadway. It makes her the longest running lead in Mamma Mia history. She also has an amazing career with lots of other things that we're going to talk about. We're so lucky to have her. Everyone, please welcome Judy McClain.
Hi there. Wow, Yul Brynner. Okay.
Right?
I guess I better shave my head. What?
Please don't. You got that gorgeous blonde hair. Judy, I'm so grateful you're here. Thank you for taking time from your busy schedule
to talk
to me.
Absolutely.
So talk to me, number one, about how things are. Like, what have you been up to since...
Well, it's been a little crazy, hasn't it? You know, I've actually been busy during this pandemic. It's been actually kind of crazy trying to update our sound systems and doing videos for concerts and things like that. So you end up being, you know, the lighting person, the caterer, the hair and makeup, and you know,
have
everything.
We ever been more grateful for our designers
our sound and tech crew and everybody else, our IATSE guys? I've never been so eager to get back to them. In fact, I just did a concert on Saturday and I think I was so appreciative of just being live and not having to record myself. That was the other thing besides just performing. It was great.
But
my teaching I do a lot for a lot of universities. I go out to universities and doing them over Zoom right now, Purdue and Wagner College and other places. So that's been really great. And then I had like a great surprise. I had just closed right before the pandemic. We were in tech rehearsals for a show called Romeo and Bernadette off Broadway, a brand new show. And we had done a short run on 54th Street, but we were opening a theater on 42nd. And, you know, obviously we all closed down on the March 13th. But I ended up getting an Outer Critics Circle Award for it, which was really like in the middle of the pandemic. I thought, wow, that's just really fun. It's a really fun show. It's kind of Romeo and Juliet meets the Mafia, and maybe like it's almost like Moonstruck, that kind of musical. It's very fun and heartwarming, and I get to sing legit, which I don't, you know, that's my background. Ooh. I come from a classical background anyway.
Do you really? I didn't know that.
I do, yeah. I started off, wow. That's how I got my degree as a classical singer. And then I started belting, and that was the end of that. Everybody just said, she's not legit. She's going to be a belter. So that's where I made my living forever. But yeah, so it's been, you know, and I bought a car, which is really cool. I get to go
for New York, or that's a
right?
big thing.
I've always wanted a car, so I've been traveling a lot and seeing family when I can, obviously when I'm vaccinated, and so that's been really great. And now getting to do concerts. I actually did a concert in honor of Jonathan Tunick the other night, and Sondheim was there.
Oh my
and,
gosh. We just got done. We did a Titanic episode recently.
Oh,
and
wow.
You can't talk about Titanic without Jonathan Tunick.
Those orchestrations.
What an incredible orchestrator.
Right.
Yeah.
He is, you know, EGOT, and you know, he's just the sweetest man on the planet. So it was fun because his buddy turned up, Stephen Sondheim, and I got to sing Last Midnight for him, which was really cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Full
I had done the
chills.
National tour of Into the Woods many years ago as the Baker's Wife. So it was kind of fun to do the witch for the first time, which is really cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, how fun.
And he surprised me then too, which is interesting. My very first show on at the Kennedy Center as the Baker's Wife, I was going on, and after the show, they said, everybody stay on stage, and the curtain came in, and in walked Stephen Sondheim, and it was my very first show on as the Baker's Wife, and I went, oh my God. So, you know, he surprised me
well,
this time,
Well, thank goodness
too.
You didn't know until
I know,
after,
and I didn't
right?
know he was there the other night until I went talk to him afterward, and so that was really great. That was really okay, good. That's good.
That's crazy. How is he? So he's out in public. He's doing
he's
well.
He's out. I think he was actually great to be out. He was actually stayed at the party longest of anybody. He and Jonathan were the last people to leave.
Shut it down.
Right? He shut down the party. So I was like, 91, okay.
Killing
you know,
it.
He's kicking, you know, still doing it. So it was
That's
great
amazing.
To see that. Yeah.
Well, you obviously have an incredible career and legacy outside of Mamma Mia. I first heard of you because of Johnny Guitar,
right.
which was a really fun off-Broadway show. Can you talk to me, though, about how Mamma Mia came into your life?
Well, it's so funny. You know, it was right after Johnny Guitar. I had just kind of closed that, and people had said for a long time, well, you should do the show, you should go in for the show, and finally I went in, and they brought me in as for Donna, actually.
Okay.
And so I went in and, you know, got a call back as Donna. But then at that point, they had cast Carol Lee in between time. So, which
Carol
is great because she's amazing. Yeah, we love her.
Come
and
on.
She's like my sister. And so when I went back to the callback, they looked at me and they said, hey, can you just read for Tanya, which I hadn't prepared at all for it. Went out in the hallway with David Grinrod, the casting director from London, and we just kind of read through the scene. He read with me. I went back in and I got cast, called the next day to do Tanya, which was just
wow.
such a turnaround, you know. And I ended up doing it for 7.5 years. And the beauty of Mamma Mia with that is that I still had a symphony career. They would let me go and do my symphony concerts. I was able to go to Pioneer, you know, where you are right now in Utah.
Utah.
Right? I went to Pioneer to do Next to Normal, and I was still doing Mamma Mia at the time. And so I kind of was able to keep another career going at the same time. It was really nutty. And so it was just the gift that kept on giving. So what happened was I was getting ready to leave Mamma Mia. I was done. It was 7.5 year mark. And I said, you know, it's time.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah. And I said, I'm ready to leave. And they said, no, we want you to really sing again for Donna. I was like, yeah, no, I'm done. I was walking with my sisters. I remember they were in town. And they said, what was that about? And I said, were you saying no to? And I said, well, you know, I don't want to go in for Donna. I don't want to sing for them again. I'm done. They're like, no, you have to do it. You have to do it. I said, okay. So I said, okay. I went on the down low and sang for them again and ended up, you know, doing the role for 3.5,
wow.
almost 4 years. So, yeah.
And speaking of shutting down the party, like, didn't you,
yeah,
you closed it out?
One of the most amazing nights of my life. I mean, honestly, because I had done over 11 years of Mamma Mia, over 4,000 shows. When I came out, you know, when Donna breaks open the door and she comes with her, you know, the drill, and you're in your overalls and you open that door, and the audience just didn't stop for a long time. And it was so funny. Prior to the show, I said to the last show, the audience was crazy because it was filled with all Mamma Mia people that had done the Broadway and, you know, been involved with it.
Family.
Yeah, totally family. And I said, went up to my Sophie, Elena Ricardo, and she's just amazing. I said, we have to do our show. We're not winging to the audience. We're just going to do our show. We got to just keep focused on each other. And she said, yeah, yeah. Okay, good. And then I went over to Tanya and the Donna, and I said to the both of them, I said, you know, we're going to do our show. I'm going to count on you guys to just stay focused with me. And I said, great. So I opened the door. Now I'm up there and I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to break down. I'm going to lose it, right? Because the audience is just not stopping. And I thought, well, I've got to look at my girls. And I look at the Tanya and I look at the Rosie at the time. Their eyes are welling up. And I thought, oh, great. Thanks
can't,
a lot,
can't
guys.
Can't depend on you at all.
Thanks for the support, right? So I said, well, I can't look at them. But anyway, it was really an amazing night. The audience was like raising the roof out of the theater. It was so remarkable. It was really remarkable. Everybody that knew the show, had done the show over the Broadway years, it was really a highlight of my life.
That is really amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a bit of a confession to make to you. Mm-hmm. At the very beginning of starting this podcast, which was like back in 2019, feels like another lifetime ago.
Totally.
The first thing I released was a trailer that I called The Overture, in which I introduced like what I was trying to do with the show,
sure.
which is have conversations about the cultural and emotional impact of musical theater.
Yeah.
And I want to play some of that trailer for you now. Okay.
Okay.
And that might mean that we're covering a musical that I don't really care for. I'm looking at you, Mamma Mia.
Ooh!
But it's one of the longest running shows in Broadway history, so who am I to say that people aren't connecting to it? So we'll look at it and we'll at least come up with a hypothesis as to why
so
people connect to this show. And
you know, I didn't like it when I first saw it.
Okay, thank you.
I didn't like it when I first saw it.
It makes me feel a little hypocritical because here I am doing a show
about Mamma Mia
because someone requested it because I want people to go and see their production.
That. I think you should.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm busted. I'm on record as saying that I'm not a huge fan. But here's the thing. The more that I have done research and prep for this episode, the more I have come to respect this show. And I mean it. And I can't help but feel like if you didn't feel the same, you wouldn't have done literally 4,000 performances of it.
But I'm going to be honest with you. I think for me, doing the show is actually better than when I saw it. I didn't like the show.
That's like how I was with Cats. I didn't like Cats until I did it. And then I was like, this is really fun.
But you can't deny that it affects people. And there's something that it does to people. And that's what it serves.
Hmm.
Right.
There's
something that the regular Joe, all of us theater crew people are going to say, oh, it doesn't this. But as a jukebox musical, some of the ones that followed really weren't as great.
No, everybody has tried to do what Mamma Mia got right. And it's actually proven to be much more difficult than we thought.
And these they did it. They did it right. They did a lot of things that I'll talk about that. But I think they did a lot of things that were right about it. So, I did. I hated the show when I first saw it. I did.
Well, there you go.
But I think that's something valid to talk about.
And at the end of the day, I guess it really doesn't matter that I didn't care for it when I first saw it either, because it's a sensation.
And you have to know when you do the show, if you ever do the show, you will change your tune drastically.
Oh, I
and you'll catch
that.
On to what other people are getting from it. It's kind of weird. But I know. Are you kidding me? That's why it's really important for me to know that I have another career prior. I had a major career besides Mamma Mia, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's all people you want to. And that's sometimes hard for me because I've done Evita, La Mancha. I mean, I just did Masterclass. I've done Wit. I've done major, major women's roles. And, you know, I just did Sunset. You know, it's just so it's so frustrating to me sometimes that it's like, well, Mamma Mia, Mamma. And, you know, but I've come to embrace it.
Yeah,
because it's my calling card. It is what it is. People in the business don't appreciate it as much. What are you going to do about that?
Well, do you know what? I hope that because we have our listeners are just diehards and they've got big open hearts. And so I really feel like after this episode, we're all going to walk away with a new appreciation for the show and what it has done for so many people all over the world.
Yeah.
In order to talk about it, though, we got to first talk about ABBA. Right?
Right.
Now, ABBA is the most successful non-English speaking music group of all time, which I think sometimes we forget. English was not their first language.
Right. They learned it by syllable. That's crazy. How they phonetically, they learned it phonetically, the girls. I don't know, and Benny and Bjorn speak English very well. But
sure, yeah. Sure. Now, the name ABBA is an acronym for the first names of the members of the group. Mm-hmm. And help me if I get these this pronunciation wrong. Agneta Falskog, Bjorn Ulvaeus, Benny
Ulvaeus.
Anderson, mm-hmm. and Annefried Lyngstad. Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever been able to meet any of them?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, you know,
really?
Here's the deal. Chess was my first Broadway show.
Stop it.
No.
That was in the ABBA. 80s?
Yeah. I was a baby.
Oh my gosh.
And,
okay, that's crazy.
Yeah, and so I met Benny and Bjorn back then with Tim Rice and worked with all of them. So
wow.
It was kind of full circle. I mean, that score is an amazing score, right? It's
incredible
score. I learned how to belt on that score. And so I understudied Florence, and I ended up doing that show many, many times in the course of my career, doing Florence with Robbie Marshall and all these different people that, you know, had their interpretation of it. But people don't know that score, and they only think ABBA wrote just the pop stuff, and they have an mm-hmm. amazing catalog in that. You
no,
know?
They really, really do. Now, ABBA first gained success by winning Eurovision, which is a singing competition in Europe that mm-hmm. I think most Americans think is just a Will Ferrell movie. No, it's real.
It's real, yeah.
And ABBA won it in 1974. And up until that point, Benny and Bjorn had been working together as almost like a Simon and Garfunkel act, right? And they had okay success, but then they added these women
the
with
blondes,
those voices,
right?
And
the blondes.
Their energy.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I've been watching a lot of old music videos of theirs.
Oh, have you?
Like in prep for this, they kept coming up, and I just went from one to the other because I hadn't seen any of them. And these ladies are so, I don't want to say serious, but they are so invested in what
they're
doing.
Very invested.
But once these women join the guys, I don't know what it was that inspired them, but you really can't hear or listen to any of their songs without being emotionally moved in some way.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a full sound. It's mm-hmm. very orchestral, mm-hmm. but incredibly catchy.
Mm-hmm.
They use their voices in a way that just kind of, I don't know, it can give you chills and also make you giggle at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And they can write a hook.
Oh my gosh,
I mean,
can they write a hook?
They can write a hook.
You are right, Judy McLean. Now, the band breaks up in 1982 because they were all married to each other. And those
totally.
Marriages eventually broke apart and they decided they needed to go separate ways. But like you said, Benny and Bjorn kept working together and they almost immediately turned their sights to musical theater. And then that's how Chess was born.
Yeah.
Now, we've already done an episode on Chess, and I highly recommend our listeners go back and listen to it if they haven't already. Yeah. It was a huge hit in the UK and
huge.
A flop on Broadway.
Oh, please don't say it like that.
But look, the
well,
F word is not a bad word
no,
on our
it
podcast.
Was really a sad and unfortunate thing what happened. I mean, it was a really tough year. Into the Woods was that year, Phantom.
Mm-hmm. And that cast recording is dynamite.
Yeah, didn't even
I
get
love
nominated,
that thing.
Though. It did not even get nominated for a recording.
No.
For cast recording.
Insane.
For musical, best musical. And that was, it was really, it was the Times, the New York Times of Frank Rich, and he raked us over the coals, and that was really unfortunate. I think part of it was the set was not the same, and the concept was they took too much politics in it. That's the show that everybody wants to try to get right, you know?
You're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Because you listen to that original concept album and it's so kind of like the ABBA stuff, so orchestral,
yeah,
so, but
beautiful.
Then there's this added depth that they as composers really started bringing to musical theater, and it actually
with Tim
this is
Rice.
When I, with Tim Rice, exactly, who's you know not so shabby in terms of his musical theater career. But this is when I honestly start feeling a little bad for Benny and Bjorn, because they were really trying to create something super ambitious and meaningful for musical theater, you know, with like their score for Chess, and then also later with a show called Christina, which I also love.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until Mamma Mia, which just uses all the songs they didn't write for musicals, that they finally had a hit on Broadway.
Right.
I feel like that is some like weird
karma. I don't know.
Weird karma, exactly.
I don't know. Something, yeah.
And I think because of that, they were, at least from what I understand, they were a little nervous to create Mamma Mia.
Oh, very
right?
much
because
so, yeah.
these songs were not meant to be in a musical, so they had to be convinced.
Well, it was Judy Kramer who did the convincing, the producer Judy Kramer, which is really cool. Judy Kramer with this show, you know, she's a woman, she got a woman director, she got a woman writer, book writer, and she herself with the producer is, you know, when she was at a meeting with them, supposedly the last dinner to convince them, and she was going to max out her credit card. She was buying them dinner, and she said, if they had ordered one more bottle of wine, I was going to max it all
we
out.
We were toast.
You know, she spent every last penny.
Wow.
She knew Tim Rice, and that was her connection to them. So, and she convinced them to do it, and, you know, they agreed, and boy.
I mean,
she
became
like one of the
vision.
Richest people, you know, in England and probably around the world now at this point.
She paid off those credit cards and then some.
Yeah, right. And a great lady to boot. Like one of the best producers I've ever worked for. Yeah.
Really?
Amazing. Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Generous.
I'm just so obsessed that this story that features three strong women who like call themselves the Dynamos also features a creative team that is their own dynamos.
Right. I mean, Judy is a Tanya for sure. She calls herself that. She used to call, I used to be Tanya. She was, when I first started, she was Tanya 1, I was Tanya 2.
Oh, that's funny.
She's definitely a Tanya for sure. Yeah.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
I love that boss lady.
Yeah.
Then she gets the British playwright, Katherine Johnson, to write the script, who's number 2. And then they bring on director Phyllida Lloyd.
Yep.
That's how you say her name, right?
Yep, Phyllida.
Phyllida?
Mm-hmm.
For all of the eye-rolling that I think sometimes we can do in musical theater about Mamma Mia, Phyllida Lloyd is a serious theatrical director.
Yeah. More straight plays she has done than really, you know, than doing musical theater.
It's like she wasn't nominated for directing Mamma Mia, but she was nominated for directing Mary Stuart.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's insane the kind of stuff that she brings to the stage.
Yeah.
Which makes me think there is something here. There's something at the core of this story that is dramatically worthy of being told.
You know, and I think also, you know, theater does a lot of things. It's to move people and bring people to different levels of whatever kind of, you know, whether it's a serious play, whether it's, you know, going to see Chekhov or you're going to go see Mamma Mia. Everything serves its purpose, right? And there's sometimes, especially this was the first Broadway show to open after 9/11. And
absolutely. Can we talk about that?
Well, now, I wasn't there then, yes, but absolutely. I guess this
where,
is the first
one. I just kind of want to know, where were you during 9/11?
I was here in New York. I was actually in New York. And
wow.
It was a very serious time. You know, it was, I was actually just finished. I think it just finished doing a show. So I was in between shows at that moment.
Scary.
Yeah, it was crazy. But that opened, and supposedly Meryl Streep fell in love with it because she saw her daughter smile for the first time after 9/11 when she was watching Mamma Mia. So it really had an impact on her.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things that I found most touching about the entire Mamma Mia evolution, is that it's a big hit in London. Then 9/11 happens. Everything shuts down for 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
All of Broadway shuts down. Rudy Giuliani, in a really, honestly, a great decision.
I know. Where's he? Where's that guy?
Right. Where's that Rudy Giuliani?
Yeah.
He basically tells all the Broadway producers, we need to get theater up and going as soon as possible.
Yeah, David Letterman.
So after only 48 hours, all of the shows are back up.
Right.
And for the most part, the shows that stayed open, were kept open by New Yorkers because there wasn't any tourism during New York after 9/11, right?
Right.
So Tale of the Allergist's Wife, the producers, these types of shows that are like quintessential New Yorker type theater are staying alive.
Mm-hmm.
Then Mamma Mia opens the month after. And I really do believe that Mamma Mia is the first musical that brought tourism back to Broadway, the first new musical that brought tourism back to Broadway.
Probably.
And also, it was just so darn infectious that, like you said, people were smiling and dancing.
Yeah. I mean, we needed something happy
cow.
After 9/11, right? We all did.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was the medicine that we all needed at that time.
What
know?
A gift.
Yeah, truly.
And I can't help but feel like when something, speaking of karma, is like that full of joy and a great intention like that, like no wonder it ran for freaking 9 years or how long was it? Was it 9? Anyway.
I was there.
It's the ninth longest running Broadway show.
Yes.
And then,
I
14 or 15 years.
Yeah, and I was there for 11 of them, so.
There you go.
Crazy. I know.
Hi, Kim Huber.
Hello, Jeffrey Scott Parsons.
Okay, before we get into this special little section of the episode, you got to tell me your craziest Sunset Boulevard story.
That's a Boulevard story.
I know. It has nothing to do with Mamma Mia. And I really try to stay above the drama.
Okay, I'll tell you the most
amazing.
This is no drama. This is the best day ever.
Okay, awesome.
And that is that Glenn Close is one of the most amazing humans on the planet. And one day she decided that she would take all the ladies of the ensemble out for just a weekend at her house.
And what?
She had limos lined up for us. We all got into limos. Went up to, you know, upstate New York, up to her beautiful cottage of a home, just perfect little home. She had dinner ready for us. We dished about her favorite leading men. We had a slumber party. She made us popcorn on her stove. Then we all slept in different parts of the house. And then we woke up, she's making us breakfast. And then next thing we know, all these cars show up and she goes, I thought we'd have a spa day.
Oh my gosh.
Manicures and pedicures, and I had a massage in her bedroom. Just my shower. just use her shower. She's the most down to earth, generous, lovely human being, just authentic to the core. And I'll tell you, the guys in the ensemble were really mad.
They were pissed of all that alone Glenn time.
So we ended up having a 4th of July party at her house, but it was incredible. So, I mean, everything about that show was, just first class. It was first class. Just wonderful.
That's amazing to hear. Oh my gosh. I don't think we get enough stories like that from the whole Sunset Boulevard experience. So I'm so happy to hear that.
Not really from the cast?
Well, no, just in like the lexicon of musical theater.
Oh, but as right? far as the cast goes, we are forever bonded, and not through drama, but through just, we were treated so beautifully. Yeah. And my other crazy story is that, so I covered Alice Ripley in the original cast, and she got really ill, but Glenn was already out that night, so they didn't let Alice be out. But in right after the first scene, she was like, I'm out. And in Alice back in the day, I mean, she was just cords of steel. She was never out. Yeah. And so she was like, I'm out. And so all of a sudden I hear Kim Huer down to please come down to stage management. I'm like, oh dear, I had never been on before. And they throw me in the clothes, and Alan Campbell doesn't even know. And I just walk on to Schwab's, and it's a new person. Neither does our musical director. And like, here I am, new Betty Schaefer. Here she is. I was 22. It was exciting. Like, now I'd be like, oh my God, this could be really bad. But, you know, you're 22. You're like, bring me on. It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic and terrifying and hilarious. as Betty says, I would want to dig a hole and pull it in after me.
Who says that?
Betty does.
God, you know the show better than I do.
I've listened to that cast album so many times. When she's like, bass is loaded, there's not much to it. And then he said, meet Joe Gillis, he wrote it. And he said, oh, nice to meet you. And she says something like, I wish I could say the same, but I'd rather dig a hole and pull it in after me.
Oh my gosh, that completely left my brain.
Okay, anyway, thank you so much for indulging me in that.
Sure.
Now, as I said earlier, this episode is sponsored by Five Star Theatricals, which is located in Thousand Oaks, California. And they are returning to live performances at last at the beautiful and enormous Kavli Theater with their production of Mamma Mia. I love performing at that theater. There's so much space backstage. You just feel like you can move in. Mamma Mia was originally supposed to happen in 2020, but we all know how that went down. So now it's finally happening October 15th through 24th. It's just 2 weeks of performances. And starring as Donna in this production is Broadway veteran. You've already heard her because we just had an entire conversation. And a future guest on the podcast. Don't worry, I've already made sure that's going to happen. Everyone, please welcome Kim Huber. Yay!
Thank you.
Okay, Kim, thanks so much for chatting with us. You guys are already in rehearsal, so I'm not going to take a whole bunch of your time, but how's it going?
Oh, it's so much fun. I mean, not only is the show wonderful, but just the whole idea of being in the rehearsal room with everybody.
We did
a table read the first day, and they started
singing.
How
luxurious.
I know, right? But there's a couple new cast members just to hear, you know, how it all goes together with all these folks. But Nicolette, who plays my daughter, started singing Thank You for the Music, and we all just started crying. I mean, just to hear music together in a room with the piano and friends, and it's just magical.
That's fantastic. Not to mention you've got a hunky soap star to make out with.
Oh. You know, actually, the strangest thing about COVID has been some of the rehearsals where people kiss with masks on.
It's so 2021. Oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought of that.
It's so 2021. I was like, oh my gosh, this is one of these weird memories. But, you know, we'll take it instead of doing it on Zoom. I'll say that.
And you and Donna have a lot in common. Not, I guess not a lot in common.
Not really.
But, but you both have daughters around the same age, right?
Yeah. My daughter, just within 1 year, my daughter's 21 and Sophie is 20 in the show. So yeah.
And how has that been to like age into roles that have these maternal relationships?
It's funny because it doesn't feel like age into. It feels just normal because it's like I get to tell part of the human experience of where I am right now. I'm a mom of a daughter that's that age. So it just feels natural. You know, remember when I was younger playing older parts, like, oh, I have to act a certain way. And now, you know, I just get to be myself, you know?
Wow. I mean, yeah, that's so true. I feel the same way about playing straight people where I'm like, oh, I have to be a straight guy now. And sometimes it's even scarier to be more yourself.
It's an interesting thing to learn. I mean, it's kind of a duh, but as I'm older, it's like you still feel 20, except for when I'm tired at the end of the show. But you still like, feel the same. You still, yeah, you know.
That's so sweet. Okay, now, before we wrap up, what do you think the perfect evening of going to see Mamma Mia at Five Star Theatricals would look like?
Oh my goodness. I'm not a party planner. I'm not one of those people. However, I think it's not so much that. I think you have to go to the beach before. Like, I feel like you have to like feel the sun, smell the waves, feel
Malibu
kind of that.
Malibu is pretty close.
Yeah,
to,
it's really close. Like,
to get, Thousand you know, Oaks.
Feel that really great, that you know how you, that really great shower you have after you go to the beach where you just feel so fresh and so ready, and then go get some Greek food. And eat outside. Have like one drink. And then if that's your thing.
Sure.
And then go ready to just relax and have a really, really fun time. And be ready to be a little bit moved because it's about family and friends and community and all the things we really crave right now. And I think you're, and then you'll be up on your feet at the end. It never fails.
I'm sold.
Okay.
I think a lot of people who go to Mamma Mia, they're like girls and girlfriends and like, well, let's have a girls' night out and we'll go to Mamma Mia. And I was like, okay, for me, I would get a bunch of my musical theater friends together and we would create Mamma Mia bingo boards, like bingo cards. And it would be like the squares would say like audience member singing along or a hot shirtless chorus boy, things like that. And you just kind of keep it in your program and you like cross them off as they happen to you. And then once you get bingo, you try and work it into your experience as an audience member. So like at a joke, you're like, ho, bingo.
Yes.
And then everybody else in your party realizes that you just got bingo on the Mamma Mia bingo board.
Yes. And you know, it really goes good with Waterloo. Bingo. So you could.
That's so true. I'm just saying, I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but if you hear anybody yell bingo during your run, you
I'll
can
know they
me.
Listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Fantastic. Changing lives here, people. Thank you so much, Kim. I'm so excited for you guys. This sounds like such a fun time. I am on record as not being a huge fan of the show, but I'm really excited.
Oh, no, you're going to have the best time. You're going to have the best time. Like, we are having so much fun in rehearsal, and it's such a spectacular cast, and the singing is great, the dancing, the choreography. I'm a musical theater purist, and I love me some Sondheim, and I get sticklery about my musicals, but I got to say, this one sure has won me over. It really has.
Wow.
So I really, as a piece, and then especially as this production, so please come.
Thank you so much, and break all the legs.
All right, thank you. Mwah.
Mwah. Here's the thing. I don't think Katherine Johnson had an easy job at all.
No.
This woman
what book
had
writer
to,
does.
Right, well, fair enough.
Right.
Good point. But she had to write a script using songs with titles like Voulez-vous,
right.
Mamma Mia,
right.
Chiquitita, right.
Dancing
like,
Queen.
I mean, it's not the most simple task in the entire world. What she was able to do, I think, is really smart because, number one, whether she did it consciously or subconsciously, she recognized what generation was introduced and moved by this group and by this music in the first place.
Right.
And then crafted a story that is basically a mother and daughter with a huge generational divide.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Donna, who is full on traditional women's lib, right?
Strong.
I'm not interested mm-hmm. in getting married. Mm-hmm. I'm going to raise my daughter by myself.
Right.
Very much a woman of the time when ABBA was coming, mm-hmm. you know, so mm-hmm. all of these people who are coming to see Mamma Mia know exactly who this woman
is. Right. For sure.
And then she has given birth to this daughter who has decided to have a white wedding at the age of 20.
Right.
And she's like, where did I go wrong?
Right.
And in the process of this young girl essentially looking for herself, right? In this wedding, in this marriage possibility, mm-hmm. she has decided she wants to know who her father is because that has never been spoken of. That hasn't really been ever approached.
Big secret.
And so she has found her mother's diary in which there are three separate entries mm-hmm. that allude to one of these men being her father. So
Possibly.
She sends wedding invitations to them to come to the island. Oh, by the way, we're on a make-believe island in Greece, everybody.
I know, right?
Fantastic. Do you know why they picked Greece? That seems so random.
I don't.
It really gives the show its own look.
Yeah.
Right?
The beauty of it, I guess. The colors. Maybe. I don't know.
So she invites these three men. Now, the show, the kind of the opening number of the show is the ABBA song Honey, Honey,
mm-hmm.
in which Sophie is talking to her two friends and, filling them in on this mm-hmm. plot. This is the number one moment when I'm like, red flag, something's wrong here. She's singing Honey, Honey about her possible fathers, but is she singing it as though she's her mom thinking about, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because she's reading from the book, right? So she's actually saying, she's reading it as her mother's reading. Honey, honey, how I, right?
Okay,
so she's kind of doing it as her mom because she's reading the exact quotes her mother said.
The first time I saw it, I was like, this is creepy. I don't get it.
No. She's not doing it to her father's. No.
Okay, that makes sense. So she's like, she's playing the part of her mother to try and figure out what is happening.
Right.
Thank you for, if anybody goes to see the show or when you all go to see the show, how about that? You'll be better informed than I was.
Right.
So after this, after Honey, Honey, where do we go to? Then we meet Donna, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Now tell me about her.
God, you're gonna test me now. It's been
six years
since I closed the show. My goodness.
I've got my cheat notes up here, don't worry.
Good.
So tell me about Donna. I did my little thing, but you obviously lived in her shoes.
Oh gosh, like you said earlier, independent, strong-willed, tough, right? But with a great heart. That's like she's got the great heart and loves her daughter extremely. It's her life, right? That she built this taverna by herself and,
this
has a lost love and was hurt and probably never invested in it again, was too busy running the taverna and raising her daughter. So, she's a single mom, and so that's a kind of appeals to a lot of people, I think, because that's a tough job, raising a child.
So she built this hotel.
Mm-hmm. That was actually the plans of the guy she was dumped by, supposedly dumped, right?
Right.
Supposedly.
And so not only is she running this hotel, she's maintaining the hotel. Mm-hmm. Like when we meet her, she's got a drill and overalls.
Right.
And this is when I think Katherine Johnson, the book writer, really understands how to incorporate the audience into the experience of the show.
Yeah.
Because starting with Money, Money, Money,
mm-hmm.
the songs become a joke. Not saying that you guys don't play it completely
we're not playing
seriously.
It for the jokes at all.
You're not playing it for a joke. But the fact that this woman is having money problems and then goes into, and you hear
that. Right, yeah.
Everybody goes crazy, right?
I'm sure there's like a wink wink all the time during, we're not playing it like that. We never played it like that. But there is a wink wink for sure. Here's this song, how this fits in,
And I think that that's one of the things that the audience loves most mm-hmm. is, okay, how are they going to fit this song in? And it's up to, and I think that this is a great note to anybody out there, any theater companies, any community theaters that are doing Mamma Mia, you got to play it seriously or
you
else
do.
Then it's not funny.
Or else it's not. It won't be. Yeah, really. These are real, true people that have real feelings, and you got to play it for that, right?
Absolutely. Coming from someone who did it 4,000 times, I can't get over this, Judy. I know your life is more than that, but it's kind of incredible. Talk about keeping it fresh.
And now with the pandemic, no one can beat my my record.
It's in stone. I love it. Crazy. All right, so Donna's two friends have come to help with the wedding.
All right, these quirky characters.
Tanya and Rosie. Talk to me about these two ladies.
Yeah, I mean, they're so extreme, right? They're so extreme. You know, the Rosie's the practical kind of, you know, get things done, serious a little bit more, but, you know, she's a writer. And Tanya just marries people and gets their money and goes from place to place. She's kind of a jet setter.
Get that coin, girl.
And get the coin. And wears fabulous clothes and, you know.
The three of them were a girl group back in the day.
Yeah. So, I mean,
Donna and the
Diamonds. People love to watch, you know, people getting together back from high school? I don't know how you are, but I still am friends with a lot of my friends from high school. And, you know, you revert back. So I think that's the beauty of, they bring Donna's humanity back and her humor and her fun loving part of her that you see. So you always have to love your heroine. You know, you've got to fall in love with them somehow or sympathize with them some way. And I think those girls help her do that.
That's so true. I hadn't thought about that. If it wasn't for these friends, she'd be completely stressed out about her daughter getting married.
Right.
And even more stressed out because the three men that could be the girl's father are showing up.
Right.
Like, where do we ever get to enjoy or see Donna
her
enjoy
and see
life?
Her and, right, exactly. And you have to have that with a character if you're going to follow her and follow her story. Or Sophie's story, whoever the story you think it might be.
Sure. Later that day, because now this is like the day before the wedding, right? Like we're
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Mm-hmm.
The three men
stakes
show
are
up.
High.
High stakes, guys.
High stakes. The writer wrote some high stakes. This isn't 6 months away. This is the day before.
We got Sam, who is the architect, mm-hmm. right? Who you mentioned before that had designed the taverna.
Mm-hmm.
You got Harry, who's like a British banker. He's a well-off guy, very put together. And then you got
he's gay and has a family, which
hallelujah,
I always love. La,
representation.
La, la. Yep.
And then you got Bill, who is like a Bear Grylls.
Outback kind of guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's an Australian writer and adventurer.
Mm-hmm. Traveler, yep.
And all three of them show up. They don't know why they're there, but they assume that Donna wants them there because Sophie wrote the invitation to sound that way.
They're invited, yeah.
They very quickly realize that that is not the case when Donna shows up and immediately breaks into, "I've been cheated by you." Another great like launch into a song that I think the audience just loves.
Oh God, it's great. Yeah, I love the fact, and I love how they staged it to be the men are frozen and she can experience the craziness of what's happening in that moment by them freezing and her allowed to, you know, be telling the audience what's going on, you know. It's pretty, you really
totally
get to see what's going on underneath for her, which is really a fun moment, especially to play.
Okay, question for you as an actor, mm-hmm. because I find this to be really challenging with jukebox musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Second verse, right? In musical theater, the material is supposed to be always constantly pushing
the plot
forward,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And that can often be found in the blueprint, in the lyric, right? Or even in the arrangement of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And so often with pop music, it's just meant to be a groove.
It
you know,
is,
we launch into the song.
You also get to see some emotional life of what the character is going through. So I think that's kind of what happens in that second verse.
Yeah. So that was my question. Like, how as an actor do you approach a song where you're like, I got a lot of song here and a lot of lyrics that kind of just say the same thing over and again?
Yeah, they don't, though, actually. I was angry and sad when I knew it through. I think you get some backstory of what's going on, so there's a little bit of exposition
cool.
with that. And the way she refers to specifically Sam and how that he becomes the focal point for her, not just all the three dads, but you find out more so he was the one that broke
her
heart.
He's the sore spot.
So you do find out, you get some information in that song.
That's cool.
By the way, it's staged and the way it's, you know... way it's done. So I do think in that song specifically, it actually does kind of forward you along to go, oh, this is the guy
nice.
She was in love with.
I love that. So it's all about specificity. It's
all
just getting
it.
Specific
I mean,
either in the staging or, yeah,
right.
exactly.
Everything's about being specific and how it affects you, right? So
that's great.
Yeah.
Love it. We haven't even talked about poor Sophie's fiance, whose name's Guy, and he's always hot, and we love him. But God bless them. They're getting married super young, and so they sing this great Lay All Your Love on Me. Okay, can we talk really quickly about the London cast recording?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Haven't listened to that in a long time.
Yeah, I hadn't either. And it's really weird. I just got to say, really wish that you guys would have done a cast recording, because it's got like this weird synth sort of preset over the entire thing.
Wow.
And so it doesn't really sound like a traditional cast recording at all.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, it sounds like pop music of that period, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I just wish that I had a recording of the show of how it sounds
really
in theater.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Theatrically
yeah.
done.
Let's see. Let's jump to The Night Before the Wedding, which is, you know, bachelorette party, mm-hmm. bachelor party.
Mm-hmm.
Sophie is now kind of in she did not think this through. Let's just say that, right?
Yeah, let's say that it's a mess.
It's a big old mess.
Yes.
She's going to each of these men mm-hmm. who are now putting the pieces together. Oh my gosh, am I your father? And so now they all think that they're her father.
Right.
Donna is still kind of upset about it, but the girls are really getting her back into, like you said, into her fun, into her loving self.
Yep. And so she has confidants, so you know what's going on with her. So she has these confidants all the time.
Exactly. And Skye is being taken to scuba dive mm-hmm. for some pearls that have been put down in like this sunken ship area mm-hmm, mm-hmm. because like that's the tradition mm-hmm. or something.
The tradition.
It's all of this stuff happening at once. Any of these songs your favorite here at the end of the first act? We got Voulez-Vous, Name of the Game, Gimme Gimme, Super Trooper, so many.
Oh gosh, Super Trooper. No, it was not one of my favorites. I'm going to be honest. You put on some white spandex and see how you like it. White
and you look
spandex.
I have the pictures to prove that you looked fabulous.
No, every single person that puts on that darn white spandex is like, really? Really? White spandex? So, yeah. No.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Super Trooper can be really fun because it's actually all the women playing on stage together, right? So it's supposed to be a party, them dressing up like they used to dress up when they would sing together. And so,
who of these three do you think made these costumes? Like Donna, Tanya, Rosie.
Every single cast made up a different person. Every single cast. So I'm not thinking it was Donna. I'm thinking probably Tanya.
Tanya seems to be the one.
Yeah, that was always my choice, but everybody's got different choices, you know?
Now, at the top of Act 2,
yes.
Sophie's having this nightmare because she realized that this mess is a mess.
Right.
And it's the song Under Attack. It's really
kind of fun thing, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a great way to
open act. I always thought that was really
two.
Kind of a cool way to do the dream.
And it's really trippy because she sees Skye in the wedding dress.
Yeah, it's weird.
What do you think that's all about? Is
you
there
know,
some
I
like
don't
Freudian
know.
Thing?
I always thought it was kind of like, wow. You know, because I always, you know, I've always learned that dreams are your perspective from all your different perspectives, right? You are part of you in that dream. So seeing herself as...
She is Skye.
Yeah. Or she's Skye or what Skye thinks. Does she see herself as how Skye does, not want the big wedding, right? Is it this thing like, oh, no, it's coming, but projecting back at her?
Gotcha.
I think it's her kind of projection a little bit.
Now we start getting into the weeds, as it were. You know, we start really hashing out all of this drama and trying to find our way out of it. So, I mean, Sophie is kind of a hero for finally forcing these grown-ups to have grown-up time.
yeah, she is.
The big one is, of course, with Donna and Sam, which you said is, you know, certainly the sore spot in her romantic past. I love One of Us. I think that is a beautiful
I think it's my favorite moment that I sang in the show.
Really?
I used to love singing that.
It has one of those yearning type of melodies.
One of my
just
favorite
so
things
beautiful.
To sing in the show, actually, was.
That's great.
Yeah.
It then goes into SOS, which is
the hardest thing to sing for. That is the hardest thing to make. Not the hardest
make
thing.
Work.
Not hardest thing to sing. It is the toughest moment because they're, you know, it's done where they're both in their own worlds. They're talking to each other, have this argument, but they're kind of both in their own worlds.
it all falls on your shoulders to make it work.
Right. And so to make very specific about what's going on in that moment, you know, it was always a little tricky. That was a hard moment.
I can totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we haven't even talked about Pepper and Eddie, who are...
Oh, yeah, with Donya.
Yeah, who are Donna's henchmen at the hotel.
Basically.
It seems that at the bachelorette party that maybe something went down with Tanya and Pepper, right?
And that could be played so many ways. Some people say they did. Some Tanya say they didn't. I always thought it was better if they actually did hook up. And now it's like the biggest mistake of her life, right? Tanya's life.
He's like penniless. What was I thinking?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, higher stakes, I think, and better emotional life if you actually did do it. And it's like, oh, no, what have I done? And then there's more reason to put him in his place by saying, does your mother know? You know, then it's a little bit more to just squish him like a little bug, you know.
But and yet it's a true cougar moment. I mean, it's awesome.
Oh, yeah, totally is.
Sky, by the way, he found the pearls, just in case anyone was wondering.
He did find the pearls.
But he has found out what Sophie has done in terms of inviting these three guys. And he starts to question if this is the only reason that she's marrying him in the first place. Is this the only reason you wanted to get married was so that you had an excuse to figure out who your dad is? Mm-hmm. Which is a legitimate question.
Yeah, it is for him. I mean, I guess really it's about being the honesty up front. She wasn't really honest up front with him. I think that's more the question about the relationship. It's that you weren't really honest with me. You know, you didn't tell me what full disclosure, and we're getting married. So, you know, it talks about, and you know, in so many different types of relationships, the honesty, Donna not telling her daughter about the dads, you know, about really coming out and being truthful and honest when you're in a relationship.
Which I love that even when you are super empowered or that, you know, you don't need a man to complete your life, you're still learning lessons. You know what I mean?
Right?
You're still learning about how to be brave enough to have the tough conversations or be brave enough to tell the truth, even if it's just to yourself.
That's kind of the undercurrent,
very relatable.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's one of the beauty that the show reveal, that how do we operate in our relationships and how honest we are in them. And honesty is usually the better route to go. I know that it's fluff and all this stuff, but there is an undercurrent of that. It really does open people's eyes in a way that's fun-loving and light, but it does deal with very heartfelt issues.
One of my favorite heartfelt issues is coming up, which is when Donna helps Sophie get ready for the wedding.
I just got choked up thinking about it. Isn't that funny? It's
even such after all
a
that.
Beautiful moment. They're not really, they're angry at each other. They fought. And she comes to ask her for help for her wedding. And it's not really something Donna is not approve. She knows she doesn't approve of it. But yet she asks her, and they both kind of come together because what they have as mother-daughter relationship is so lovely and beautiful.
Right.
It was such a beautiful moment in the show. I mean, it just really is. No mom can come and see that show, or parent can come and see that show and not know what slipping through my fingers means.
Hmm. It's a song, reason, by the way, that I didn't even know. I didn't know that ABBA song at all.
When she, you know, Soupbag, and, you know, when you see kids grow up, and I don't have any kids, but boy, I'll tell you, I felt like I did then. And I would have more countless people come up and say that moment is just tears me apart because it goes so fast, you know.
Wow.
Life slipping through our fingers, you know.
We can all attest to that after...
after this year and a half.
After this past year, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about The Winner Takes It All. This is a powerhouse song, and from what I understand, it was the song that Judy Kramer thought, this has to be in a musical. Are you kidding me?
Wow. I didn't know that. I've never heard that said. Okay.
I that's what I read, that she heard it and just thought, this is an 11 o'clock number.
I love the fact that it says winner takes it all. She never says you know, we talk about it, but when you say winner takes it all, it's almost this time of saying, I let you take so much of my life. Right? I let you do that. I allowed you to do that because I pined over you. You walked away, which she thinks he did, right? He came back. She doesn't know that part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But someone that lied to her, Donna lets it eat at her for years and doesn't get in another relationship because of it. It's, to me, it's just a heart-wrenching moment. I think for the first time she allows herself to feel that. You took everything away from me, and I let you do it.
That's profound, because it's not just shame on you, it's shame on me.
Oh, it's more shame on me. Yeah. For me, it's more shame on me, really and truly. Wow. It becomes so specific about that. I think there's such an angst and such an anger about what Donna has let herself go through, and because of hanging on to someone that hurt you. You know, I let you take it. I let you be the winner. I let you right. do that. I'm not going to do that anymore. And it's the moment she says, no more. We're not talking. You're done. I'm out. I'm cutting you out.
Whew.
And he leaves. And
so he leaves, right?
And it tears her apart. Yeah, it's pretty profound, actually.
And also to think, I mean, going back to ABBA, the group, they were dealing with their own divorces within that group. And then this song gets written and recorded. Like, can you imagine?
Crazy, right?
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Now, Rosie, one of our BFs, she is with Bill,
yeah.
Mr. Australia.
Right.
And he's upset because they all wanted to walk Sophie down the aisle, right?
Right.
But in a really beautiful decision, Sophie has decided that Donna will be walking her
Which
down
is
the
so
aisle.
Great.
And Bill feels kind of bad about it. And Rosie tries to cheer him up, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely an attraction that's happening. And I think what I love so much about this the most is that it's fun and it's playful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a chance to open your eyes to something that you might not have seen before.
I was right in front of you and you had no idea.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
Like, you know, did you ever see that commercial? I think there's a commercial about an iPhone and this girl's walking up to in the iPhone and this gorgeous man walks by and it's like something like, you know, you're missing things, right?
That sure.
You know, this is a moment where they're both going, huh? Oh, wait a minute. And at first, I don't think Bill does. It's not the typical person
right.
he would probably see himself with. So there's all these little gems that I think are really cool about life, little life lessons. Open your eyes. Maybe that person is okay for you. Maybe maybe he is the one.
That's so sweet. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
What a great perspective.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the wedding begins. And look, I love a musical. You know I do. because especially when a musical ends with everybody in a courtroom talking to a judge.
Yeah, right.
Or at
in a chapel.
Wedding. Exactly. Donna acknowledges to everybody present that Sophie's father is there, but that she doesn't really know
which one
of them it is. Mm-hmm. And it's this beautiful moment of Sophie realizing, I guess I could do 23andMe and figure it out, but I don't really
need to know.
Care. Exactly. I don't need to know. I know who my mom is. And all three of these guys are willing to be a third of her father.
Right.
And like, how awesome is that?
Right. So it's, once again, it's redefining what we think family is.
Mm.
And for me, this show appeals to mid-America, the regular kind of regular Joes. I think that's one thing I respect a lot about the show. It does make all of those things okay. A gay marriage with children.
I hadn't even considered this. You're so right.
It's okay. Family, the definition of family is not the typical stereotypical what we think family is. It's a mother and a daughter. It's a two men and children. It's, you know, maybe a couple that won't get married, but they're together and they've invested themselves, you know, or it's having three dads and not one. You know, it's just...
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really the beauty of the show. And I'm going to say something that's not so great, but I think the movie copped out on that when they didn't do the gay Harry at the end.
Reveal.
Mm-hmm. I was upset with that because I thought our show appeals to a lot of middle America and people that don't experience stuff like that. And so I think it was really an important thing. And I think our show makes it all acceptable.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's you're putting it on a show that everybody thinks is fluff, but I do think that's really a big part of it. Without slamming it, without doing it in a loving kind of high light way, a lot of things get dealt with.
It's just a little bit of exposure that
Correct.
Maybe wasn't there before.
Right.
The last time I went and saw The Phantom of the Opera, which I hadn't been to in years,
mm-hmm.
and I got like a super cheap ticket in the back at the very top of the balcony. And I was sitting next to a guy who, no judgment at all, was wearing like basketball shorts and flip-flops.
Uh-huh.
And was there with, I don't know, he'd been dragged along with his family.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there watching the show, which has three different opera sections. One that's like Mozart, one that's, mm-hmm. You know, a little bit more contemporary.
Puccini.
And I'm sitting there thinking, Andrew Lloyd Webber is a freaking genius because he got this guy to come and sit and watch essentially opera.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And in a similar way, I see what you're saying here with Mamma Mia.
It's
exactly that you're
right.
Getting people into the theater and experiencing something and they honestly don't have any idea.
They
and
don't
it's pretty
know it.
Brilliant.
That's right. That's what I really think that's what when I think of this and able to do it for that long, it's because I was very proud of that.
Hmm.
Redefining roles, redefining how women are seen, redefining how what we think of family, redefining all those things without hitting you over the head with. It's not about that. It's not about race. It's not about anything. It's just about people going through life problems. But it also, you know, tells you a lot about relationships and honesty in relationships. And that's what really always came to the forefront for me.
That's beautiful.
That you leave people with a good feeling and they walk out the door.
Which... leave people better than when you found them.
That's
right. Is there any better mantra?
Right. I mean, so they maybe learned something along the way, so they got it, hit their hearts, the slipping through my fingers, the relationships of losing people, what that feels like to lose, you know, someone along the way or feel like you're losing someone. But yet you walk out the door and you partied and you feel like, okay, I had fun and I had a great time. But you got a lesson along the way, whether you knew it or not.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Look, I am walking away with so much respect, truly.
Good. Okay, good.
Truly.
Good.
Now, before we end, can you talk to us about the finale, the bows and everything? Because,
yeah.
I mean,
exhausting. This show, let me just tell you that. Can I just tell you, like, five show weekends were no joke. On a rake stage were no joke. I mean, I don't know how sometimes I did it or we got through it, but, the highest point of energy is at the end of the show.
Wow.
But... you know, it's contagion, right? And then when you see audience members getting up and dancing with you, I mean, it's joy is contagious. Dr. Footlights, right? Everybody says, oh, I don't feel like you've heard that expression before, right?
Dr. Footlights.
Yeah, Dr. Yes. Footlights.
I always say laughter, same with laughter.
Yeah, laughter. But you hear that music and you hear people go, whoa. I remember the first time we were in the trap. We were getting on board. We got up. We had done our quick change and we were all getting ready in our poses. And
for the lift, right?
For the lift. And Carolee and I looked at each other like, what's that? What is that noise? What's going on? It was the roar of the crowd coming up. We had no idea. We weren't ready for it. We didn't, you know, we got on a train that was moving. So we were a replacement cast. So we got on and was like, holy shit. It was like, what's going on? This is crazy. That can't help but lift you.
Oh, absolutely.
It lifts you. And it happened every single night.
Wow.
Every single night. So as you're coming up this trap, you're hearing these people going, I love that, you know, screaming at the top of their lungs.
Losing their minds.
Yeah. So, you know, it felt good to give. And I think that's why, like I said earlier, it's Mamma Mia was a family, because I think we pass joy along a lot. You can't walk out and not feel good.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this, Judy.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
This has
it was
been
fun.
Such
it was kind
a
of
joy.
Fun revisiting it again.
You've brought a lot to me, and I think a lot to everybody who's listening.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
As always, if you have recommendations for shows you'd like us to cover on A Musical Theater Podcast, you can always email me at amusicalpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at A Musical Podcast for more great content. And be sure to subscribe to Patreon! ! Where for only $1 a month, you'll not only support the show, but receive bonus episodes and content as a huge thank you. Coming up for subscribers is a special Halloween episode of Listening Party, where we'll gab our way through the Tarrytown cast recording with its writer and composer, Adam Wachter. It's a really fun conversation about this little show that's loosely based on The Legend of Sleepy Hollow and starred Andy Mientis, Jeremy Jordan, and Krista Rodriguez. So get super excited about that. We also have a T Public store, so there's just so many ways to connect in this amazing podcast community. Hey, Judy, how do we follow you and everything you're up to?
Well, I'm not such a plugger. I'm really bad at that. Oh gosh, that's awful. But I do Instagram. I have the one who actually, it's Judy McLean, Mamma Mia. It's a fan that runs it. She knows. She's usually telling me people what I do more than I do. So if you want to know what I'm doing, go to Instagram and follow her. It's
oh
Judy
gosh,
McLean,
we'll
Mamma Mia, but I don't run it.
Sure.
I don't do anything. Yeah, Olga, this girl. Oh, she lives in Russia, by the way. I mean, it's crazy, but she's like, you know, She doesn't even live here. Yeah,
man.
She's connected, right? But and also, I do have a website which I have not updated for years because my domain name got stolen.
What?
Yeah, judymclain.com got stolen when I was doing Mommy by an Uber company because it's just getting just enough hits. So I crashed and I lost everything. So I've got to redo that, but I'll get back to that. judymclain.net.
Fantastic. Thank you again. And another special thank you to Five Star Theatricals. Check out Mamma Mia, October 15th through 24th. Aww. And to find out more information, go to their website, fivestartheatricals.com.
Good luck, Kim.
Break all the legs. Thank you again, Judy, and everyone out there. You can dance. I don't know how to give it.
You are the dancing queen, young and sweet, only 17.
I'm dancing in the aisles.
I should have warmed up. It's such a morning voice.
You're amazing.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.